Welcome to the Small Batch edition of Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And I'm here in historic Studio 44 with Stephen Thompson from NPR Music. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Linda.
So Stephen and I are gathered on this beautiful Monday morning to talk a little bit about the Super Bowl, which happened on Sunday night. Now, as some of you know who have listened to our show for a while, Stephen throws a big Super Bowl party every year, so we were there together. So we've chatted a little bit about the Super Bowl, but not too much.
And it was a good, close game between two very good teams. You had a little bit of a good guys, bad guys plot line.
Yeah, but
I'm not sure the Seahawks are necessarily like a team that going into the season people necessarily wanted to see repeat, but I think they specifically did not want the New England Patriots to win.
Well, and here's the thing. I mean, going into this game, you had the Patriots, who have won plenty of times, who have been in plenty of Super Bowls, versus the Seahawks, who won last year. So there's no real David and Goliath storyline here to be had. There was obviously some business about maybe the balls were underinflated in the playoff games. But once you get past that, there are people who react instinctively to Tom Brady because he's handsome and handsome and successful and therefore very easy to dislike.
Yeah.
Once you get past that, it's not a game with an obvious David and Goliath. Now, late in the game, there was a bit of a shift where suddenly the Patriots scored and it seemed like the Patriots were going to win. And then there was a very exciting sequence leading up to an incredibly amazing catch, which was maybe one of the most awesome catches I've ever seen in a football game, which made it seem like the Seahawks were about to win. And then the Seahawks did a, to me, very weird thing. And with 1 yard to go to get into the end zone.
Second down from the 1 yard line, 20 seconds on the clock.
And they passed instead of trying to kind of punch it in, which is what I'm used to at the 1 yard line. They trying to kind of punch it in.
Okay, especially since the Seahawks have as their running back a player named Marshawn Lynch, a.k.a. Beast Mode.
Right.
The kind of person you would like to have try to run a ball from the 1 yard line to the end zone. So they ended up passing. It got intercepted, and that ended the game. And the quarterback throwing was Russell Wilson, former Wisconsin Badger, a player I really like.
Yeah.
It was, what's interesting to me about it, though, is the instant furor surrounding it, that there was kind of a unanimous cry of how could they? It was so stupid. It's the dumbest play in the history of blah, blah, blah. My team, the Green Bay Packers, blew a 16-point lead to those Seattle Seahawks. And the storyline coming out of that game was, oh my God, the Packers completely choked. Their coaches got totally timid. They just tried to run the clock when they should have been bold. They should have driven down the field. They should have kept the foot on the gas.
Yeah.
You gotta have clarity. You gotta be bold in this game. The football gods smile on the bold. And it's really interesting because 2 weeks later, the Seahawks did a bold thing. In hindsight, of course, it was a terrible, stupid, awful, dumb thing. But
because it didn't work.
Because it didn't work.
You know what I mean?
And like, in hindsight, yes, you would hand the ball to the guy to run it. And if he doesn't get it, then you take a timeout and you take two throws.
Sure.
But the Seahawks are coached by a guy named Pete Carroll, who's one of these like power of positive thinking type people. You have Bill Belichick, the coach of the Patriots on one side, who's this gruff, blah, 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 we play the game. The player did this, and he's
good. Bill Belichick,
and he's dull as dishwater, and most people who are not Patriots fans do not like him. And over here, you've got like sunny rah rah Pete Carroll, and I think Pete Carroll's mindset, and it was a mindset that everyone hailed in the aftermath of the game against the Packers, was like, you got to be bold, man. You got to just sling it down the field. You're not sitting there thinking, what if he throws an interception? You're thinking, we're going to let Russell win the game instead of Marshawn.
You know, not to sound like a broken record, but there is an entire episode of Sports Night about this very phenomenon of sitting there as a person watching the game saying, oh, what a dumb, stupid thing to do. And then realizing ultimately that you're not in the situation. You're not under the pressure that they're under. You have the benefit instantly of hindsight. And so I was exactly like everyone else. I was kind of baffled by that play call. But even while you're baffled by it, you kind of know that it is not as completely devoid of upside as it seems like it is as a decision right after you see it not work.
Right.
Okay, so we should also touch on a couple of other aspects of the Super Bowl.
Dancing Sharks.
Okay, so the halftime show those of you who are out there saying, Dancing Sharks? The halftime show featured Katy Perry and...
Lenny Kravitz and Missy Elliott.
And Missy Elliott. And when Katy Perry was doing California Girls, she had a bunch of dancing trees and dancing sharks and dancing beach balls.
Yeah.
Very cartoony
looking.
It was looking.
Very Yo Gabba Gabba.
It was very Yo Gabba Gabba. That's exactly the comparison that I made. I think it was somewhere around that time that the six-year-old with whom I watched a good part of the Super Bowl looked up and said, is this really happening right now? By which he meant, is this a taped thing or is this a thing they're actually doing? But somehow out of the mouths of babes, is this really happening right now during the Katy Perry halftime show?
And I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority on this. This was happening while I was swirling around hosting the party. I just looked at it and I thought, whoever put this show together understands social media.
Right.
This was a halftime show made by very savvy people. And when Katy Perry comes out and she's in the sort of beach ball themed getup and she's surrounded by this ridiculous spectacle, and then there are people in shark costumes going I just like doffed my cap.
It was highly memeable, and there were also parts of it that were really cool. It was really cool to see Missy Elliott. I would argue slightly less cool to see Katy Perry upon the arrival of Missy Elliott immediately change into the big baggy black sports jackety thing. Like, it was a little uncomfortable to me, but I think Katy Perry was good. I think she's kind of built for those spectacle-y things.
Sure.
I thought the lion puppet that she was on when she walked out.
Oh, it's like she came out in this
gigantic... It's like a three-story tall lion puppet. It's sort of like the giant animal puppets that they use and stuff like Walking with Dinosaurs and the war horse thing on stage. It's the same idea. And it was this giant lion. It was kind of cool.
Yeah.
I thought it was kind of cool.
I just felt like that whole thing... I mean... Anybody who complains about Super Bowl halftime shows needs to remember what Super Bowl halftime shows used to be like.
Yes, we have talked about that in the past, but there have been some really astonishing... Your favorite one that you always like to name check.
Is Phil Collins performing narrated by Edward James Olmos.
Yeah.
The line I always use about that one is it's the Super Bowl halftime show that the kids on South Park are trying to prevent.
Right. It's very... There have been a lot of Super Bowl halftime shows that literally contain up with people. And... Mm-hmm. That used to be a big thing. For a while, they were doing pop stars, and then they had the Janet Jackson kerfuffle, and then they went to old favorites Bruce Springsteen
and Tom Petty.
People who seemed like they were not going to get you in trouble. Now they've moved back a little bit with the Beyonce show that they had.
Even Prince, got very bawdy.
Right. And so they've moved back to kind of using pop singers, and I thought she did a good job.
That was
sort of fun. Less fun, the theme of the ads this year. Which was...
Solemn?
Yeah, it was a little feelingsy, which normally I think is fine. Boy, a lot of dad ads. A lot of like, your dad misses you, your dad loves you. Like a dad taking his daughter to join the military, a dad... I sort of estranged from his son, I think, and then they hugged in a car at the end.
There was
end.
Something about NASCAR at one point.
That's the one I'm talking about, but then there was also this very strange ad from Nationwide, the insurance people, which had a kid narrating saying, I'm never going to learn to ride a bike. I'm never going to date a girl. And then at the end, he's like, because I died in an accident. And then they showed a tub overflowing with water, like somebody had drowned in a tub. And they showed a TV crash to the floor, like someone got crushed by a television. It was awfully heavy for a Super Bowl ad.
Well, and these things cost more than ever, as everyone discusses every year. And I really wonder the state of the Super Bowl ad. And we've talked about Super Bowl ads on this show before, but... The fact that they cost so much and are operating in an ecosystem of viral videos and viral advertising, I think the kind of ads that you would see as attempts at viral video are what they used to do Super Bowl ads. It was like, it's really funny, it's really shocking, people are talking about it. And I think that now, all of the energy that goes into that kind of ad goes into viral marketing.
I think that's right.
And now, you're spending $4.5 million on a commercial. You want it to be a little bit more grandiose and a little bit more, like, we want to create a very safe, warm swell of feeling, unless it's about child accidents.
Yeah.
And so I think that this year lent itself to a tone of solemnity in ways that you know, typically you would see like Doritos, whackety-schmackety.
And there were a couple of those. They had a Budweiser commercial that was very strange and very stereotypical Super Bowl dude commercial. It was basically, don't drink fussy pumpkin beer, drink regular manly Budweiser.
Budweiser.
And it was, so that's sort of the less feelingsy version of a beer commercial. And in fact, the two that I liked the best are both feelingsy, one of which is the dog getting rescued by a horse, which is
fine, whatever.
I mean, fine. It's a dog being rescued by a horse while a man soulfully croons a stripped down version of 500 miles. He's like, I would walk 500 miles. And the dog is getting rescued by a horse. It's a real commercial. You should look it up. You didn't believe me.
I was hosting a Super Bowl party.
Everyone
at the
out
time.
There knows I'm telling the truth. One of the other ones that I really liked was, it's the Like Girl ad.
The Always.
Yes, of course. It comes from Always because you know who does ads about women?
Right.
Pad and tampon companies. So basically the point that they're making is that girls don't start off thinking it's an insult to run like a girl or throw like a girl, but they often learn that it is. And I recommend watching that one. It's very clever and very well done.
Yeah.
So we've got ads. We've got a game. We've got a halftime show. And I'm sure that many of you have thoughts. So come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or follow us at our very new Twitter account, which is at NPRPCHH. And full episodes of Pop Culture Happy Hour are available every Friday on iTunes or wherever you find podcasts or at npr.org. So thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, Linda.